Welcome to the People of Packaging podcast, where we introduce people to the world of packaging and the people of packaging to the world. Here are your hosts, Adam Peek and Ted Tate.
All right, before we get into this episode, just a reminder, you can go to peopleofpackaging.com, get your free ebook from the sponsors of our third season, Doxalent, which is a packaging specification management company. It is so vitally important for you to be able to manage your packaging specifications and gain control over that. So once again, go to peopleofpackaging.com. Also, some exciting news in March of 2021. Myself and a fellow podcast host, Avelio Matos, who's the host of Package Design Unboxed, we're going to be launching daily packaging tips. And that is going to be an email, just an email subscription, where we will put together just really quick, easy email, 5 minutes long, and you can get a whole bunch of news about the packaging industry. So you can go to packaging.tips, packaging dot T-I-P-S, to sign up and get your daily dose of packaging tips. We're going to start curating and we'll coming to you in March. So that being said, let's get to the interview with Todd Muesling. All right, so I'm joined here by I don't really know. Do you remember, Todd, when we met at, was that, like, I was thinking back on this time when we used to go to trade shows. Do you remember that time? And you would set up these booths and people would show up.
There was a chapter in my life where trade shows were involved, but that was so long ago. I mean, this is where we live now, right?
I know. It's I'm not, to be totally candid, this is a safe place, right? This podcast and this conversation. So sure. I was not a fan of trade shows for all of my packaging life up until about 7 months ago, when I was like, I just want to go to a trade show. I want to be exhausted. I want to have crappy food. My feet are going to be sore. And I just want to go be with people in the industry. Like, I just want to see stuff and be with people. And that's when I realized, like, I am over COVID. That was like my moment when I decided, like, when I longed for Pack Expo and walking around Chicago.
Yeah, I hear you. And of course, I've been going to trade shows for years and years, but the ones we attended virtually, and I think most of the organizations that sponsored them and presented them did as admirable a job as they could under the circumstances, right? I thought we saw a lot of great presentations, but when you come to the trade show, it's about eating, standing in line and running into somebody you haven't seen in a year, and then walking down the aisle and seeing some bottle floating through the air and you stop to take a closer look, and that was missing.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So for me, I look forward to getting back to them when we can do it and we can all feel safe about it and feel like it's time.
And I got to do so it was funny, is one of the first times that I've ever done like a video thing was with you guys at your booth. And I got back and I listened to it, and I actually went out and bought like some Bluetooth microphones, because if you recall, it's so loud at Pack Expo. And so it was after that that I was like, I'm going to do this again. And then I don't think I've been to a trade show since. Maybe I have. I think I went to Lux Pack in LA. But, anyway. Well, welcome to the podcast, Todd.
Thanks very much. Happy New Year.
Yeah, you as well. 2021. We're here and we're going to make it a better year than 2020. Fingers crossed. So, Todd, why don't you kind of introduce yourself to the people listening? We've got, I don't know, a few hundred packaging professionals from all across the globe. We're in over 50 countries now, I think, which is kind of crazy to think about. So If you speak any other languages, you can share about that.
Guten Tag, buongiorno, hola. That's about the limit of it. But hello, everyone. I'm Todd Moisling, and I'm the senior manager in market development for Presto Products Company. And my focus is working with our FreshLock business unit, and we spend our time focusing on flexible closures, so zippers and sliders that are used in pouch making for a wide range of industries and markets.
Awesome. So that's what you do, but we know that what you do isn't fully encompassing of who you are. So how did you get into being the, what was your title? Senior manager of market development is what your LinkedIn says, quite frankly, a lovely banner behind you with the zippers. So
well, I had a lot of help with that. My LinkedIn prowess is not as strong as others, but it got me there. So I'm appreciative of the people that support me.
Very good.
So on the packaging side, I think it's the journey I took was, why packaging? And I just kept on running into it. When I was in college, Indiana State University in Terre Haute, Indiana, and didn't know anybody, and I made a friend, Tim Schulman, who we're still very good friends. But at that stage in your life, you're saying to people, "Well, what's your major?" And he would say, "Well, I'm packaging technology." And at first, I'm like, "Well, that's really cool." But then the more I got to know him, I finally stopped and I said, "What the hell is that anyway? What does that mean?" It was kind of hard for him to put it into words, but what we would do is, as we spent time together, we might come across a package that had a unique feature to it, the way it opened or something, how it was shaped. And he'd say, "You see how they're doing that? And you see how they're doing this in this package?" He goes, "That's packaging." And that stuck. It kept on going. And so we would get examples of this and I left there, and then shortly after, I was looking for a job, poor, and Bemis Company called me up, which is a major manufacturer and converter of flexible packaging.
Yep.
And they were looking for somebody in sales at that time, and I said, "Well, what would I be doing?" They said, "Well, you'd be selling bags or film," and I thought, I have absolutely no interest in the world in doing this, because that's akin to like selling pencils. There's nothing sexy about it. There's nothing. I mean, if you'd say, "Well, this might lead to you being an astronaut someday," I would have loved that. And so I turned them down, but they came back another time and I was even poorer. And so I joined them, and it's strange, but when I learned what was going on there, it was like opening the door to the Willy Wonka factory. It's all of a sudden I enter this world into packaging, and I see all the different possibilities and things that we're doing behind the consumer curtain, behind what the consumer sees.
Yeah.
I haven't looked back. So I was primarily films. And then in 2008, Reynolds called me, and they wanted me to, they asked if I'd be interested in getting involved in closures. And that's how I got involved in zippers.
Nice. So would you say that they closed you on the opportunity?
They closed the opportunity, Adam. I think that's a great way to put it in there.
I'm not proud of that, Todd.
Close.
I'm not proud of that one, but I just had to do it.
It's the first time really I've heard anything like that.
I don't believe that for a second. I can only imagine your sales and marketing meetings where it's like, "Now, did we close these guys?" It's like, "Yeah, Frank, we've heard that joke 57 times already.
You guys in the back, would you mind zippering it up?"
Oh, man. Yeah, when we start combining packaging and bad dad jokes, yeah, that's really where I shine. That cross section, that Venn diagram, it's where I feel like I need to live. I'm not sure.
I'm looking around as you said that, but I actually got that book bad dad jokes for Christmas. One of my daughters gave me that book, and I was going to show it to you, but I didn't know that we would touch
That's fine.
On it.
I got one of those flip calendars that you peel off. And so my one from the other day was this. It was actually my favorite. Some of them are really bad. I'm like, that's not even that's just a bad joke. Yeah. But this one was, it was somebody the effect of like, why do Danish naval ships have barcodes on the side of them so that when they return, they can Scandinavian?
Where's my drums?
Ayo. I can add it. I can add in the
I'll be throw it.
Anyway, we don't. We now like everyone's gone. They're like this podcast interview's over.
Yeah, they've tuned out. Right?
They've tuned us out. Yeah, sorry, Todd. We didn't even get to talk about how cool your stuff is. So, but just in case people are still hanging around, you know, I do want to get into, you know, kind of talking about. We talk a lot about sustainability here, and I think that what you guys do has a really, it's not interesting. It's very functional, and I want to dig into that. Before that, though, you mentioned you had this is the people of packaging, so we're going to talk about packaging. But you know, where do you live? What's your family? What do you like to do for a hobby? If you have, I try to remind people. You have 56 hours on average every week outside of work.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be just about your work, right? Like have hobbies and things that you like to enjoy. So what, you know, tell me about your family and what's some stuff that you love to do. And then let's talk about some packaging.
Well, thanks. So I'm a Midwesterner, lived in a lot of different places, but I reside in Chicagoland. And right now I'm my wife and I are on the cusp of empty nester, not quite there, but you know, we can see it. And four children, and they're all in the area as well. And so I guess, you know, we're kind of at a stage in our life. It's like we're doing things like saying, well, should we remodel that room so that we can get ready to sell when we want to downsize or right size or something like that?
Yeah.
You know, as far as activities that we're involved with, we like to travel when we can. Obviously, we haven't been doing that.
Sure.
I love the outdoors. I like hiking and backpacking. But I also enjoy reading. I try to get a good book in when I can. Gardening. And then this year, I feel like if for those of you that own Home Depot stock, you're welcome. Because
you helped.
I think all the downtime where I wasn't traveling, we were spending our time remodeling something. So
got it. Okay. So two questions about that. Number one, what's like, it doesn't have to be your favorite book of all time, but what's a book right now that you're just like, I love reading, you know, this style or this author or this,
boy,
you know, what's that?
So I'm a science fiction guy. I'm a suspense or thriller guy. But I've been trying to go into different paths because I feel like there's a lot of good books out there that
there are
missing out on. So actually the one I just started that I'm reading is a historical book, and it's called Mornings on Horseback.
Oh, and that's I've read that.
You read it?
Yeah, that's is that this is a long time ago. Is that Eisenhower?
Oh, it's Roosevelt.
Roosevelt. Yeah, it's Roosevelt.
And Teddy Roosevelt is, to me, kind of an interesting character in politics and in history, just all the different things that he was involved in. And, you know, a bit of a, obviously, a naturalist on one hand and a hard charger on another, and then the leader of a country. And this book is really about his youth and kind of the formative years of how he became who he is.
Yeah.
But so far, I've really been enjoying it.
That's great. And then where's your favorite place to travel?
Well, I mean, I haven't been to all of them yet, so I can't come back and say that my favorite is, but I would say that I certainly love Europe. When I get a chance to go to, you know, Germany or France or last year I was in
for packaging trade shows, of course.
For packaging trade shows, of course.
Yeah.
Now, if I happen to, you know, mess up on my airline tickets and stay an extra 4 or 5 days here or there.
Stuff happens, Todd. Stuff happens.
Things happen. So, yeah. You know, and so I enjoy that. And then, you know, I, as far as in the country, in the U.S., there's something great about every place that I go to visit. But I guess I find that the coastal or extreme part areas of the country tend to offer a lot for me. So
got it. All right. You know, well,
West Coast, East Coast, that kind of thing.
When you come to Utah, we can, I'm sure you'd enjoy it here.
Yeah, I know I would.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm super fascinated because I was explaining to you before we got on the call. I don't have a background in flexible packaging. You know, I kind of cut my teeth in the folding carton setup, rigid setup box, corrugated, so more paper-based packaging. And then I started working for a company that did shrink sleeves and pressure sensitive labels. And now the company that I'm with, I've been here for a little over a year, so I'm certainly nowhere close to being an expert. It'll take many, many, many years to be there, but you know, we do flexible films, and it's funny because the idea of sustainability with packaging is certainly a topic that is rightly never going to go away. We should always be pressing the envelope and kind of pushing for that. But I get asked more about the sustainability of flexible packaging than any other substrate I've ever worked with. So you had mentioned that that's an area of passion for, so I just want to make sure I'm saying the name right. You work for, the brand is Freshlock. The company is Presto.
Yeah. So, in our hierarchy, we're actually part of the, Reynolds Consumer Group.
Got it.
And so the majority of our businesses is consumer-based products. So think in terms of the brands of Hefty or Reynolds Wrap.
Got it. Oh, yeah.
Now, our business is a subset of that and under Presto Products. And Presto Product does a lot of private label versions of like trash bags, storage bags, those mm-hmm. types of things. And then we're a commercial aspect where the zippers and closures that we make are used for our customers who might be doing their own packing, making their own bags. And so that's kind of puts us from macro to micro.
Got it. Well, I know that you had mentioned, you know, that it's that it's, and even when we met at Pack Expo, you know, I remember we walked through like the different consumer you know, people that tend to work with flexible packaging. So, how prevalent
the personas, right?
The personas, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Yeah, we did that, and nobody could hear anything because I was literally filming it from my iPhone, and the audio was coming through to my microphone on my iPhone. I was like 6 feet away in the middle of Pack Expo, and Todd's just back there like. And over here we've got Ted.
You just hear like, that's when you said I'm gonna get. And that's when you get. I said I'm gonna get some Bluetooth, earphones and things, but I'll just never get to use them.
Yeah. Well, now I can't use them because nobody. Yeah. We're not doing these things. Hopefully soon. So sustainability with flexible packaging. The idea like. The most overlooked aspect, in my opinion, again, this is a very new to the industry opinion, is the freshness, specifically when it comes to food and stopping food waste. You know, as I've come to learn that food waste is the third largest contributor to greenhouse gas emissions. And so having proper ways to keep that food fresh, to keep it out of landfills and to have it be consumed is maybe the single greatest like sustainability checkmark for flexible packaging. That's been my, again, very new to the industry, we'll call it naive, you know, I've tried to do some research on it. So, first of all, is that an aspect that you guys speak to quite a bit with your FreshLock product?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, that concept, as you understand it, is, you know, for as new as you are as flexible packaging, it's very observant. You know, we hear some of these statistics that up to 40% of our food is wasted. Mm-hmm. And we hear things about how we're going to have to put a lot of focus on greenhouse gas reduction. And one of the things that we talk about is that when you think about a farmer in the field and he puts the energy into planting a seed and or raising an animal, and then all of the money and resource and that he needs in order to be able to foster that to the point where he can then harvest and put it in the marketplace, then everything that goes through in those channels, and it processes the distribution to the grocery store or the restaurant, it gets served up only to have you say, I really don't feel like anymore, thank you, to dish it into the garbage. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where they're saying it's like there's a lot of energy and resource that is put to what will end up as waste. Now, that's one path it could take. Where flexible packaging can come in to that and help is that, you know, our job in flexible packaging is to try to help contain and preserve a product through that journey. And when we add a closure to it, we're amplifying that. We're adding a doorway, you know, to the product. And the primary focus of any closure, going back to a cork for a wine bottle, is to preserve and to contain. Mm-hmm. So yeah, to your point, as I think not only as we move from rigid to flexibles and we see more and more applications doing that, we're reducing materials compared to what we had in rigid. But then when we add closures to things like pouches, we're providing a path to be able to maintain what the freshness or the atmosphere of that package was, to protect that product and then to contain it. So that it minimizes waste.
Why don't I've never thought about this until you were just talking about it. So I love coffee. I mean, like, I've been a barista before. I even learned how to do like latte art for a minute.
Nice.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. So why is it that coffee bags, and it's almost every coffee bag, does not contain some sort of zipper or closure other than the little plastic, you know, the straight plastic bar where I got to fold it up and it just always destroys my coffee. Like my coffee shelf life, I feel like if I don't pour it out, you know, the whole beans into some sort of container, if I don't do that, it's like from the time I've opened it, I think I've got like 6 or 7 days till that coffee is no longer like, why don't people put your closures onto coffee bags?
Yeah. Well, more and more people are asking us those questions, including from the coffee industry. And as I think as we start to transform using sustainability, saying, you know, so a coffee company says, boy, I've got this package here and it's worked for many years, but it's not sustainable. I can't recycle it, can't compost it. You know, I've got to look at doing something different. And I think as they embrace that change, then it'll make sense for them to start saying, is our current method the best method to use? Mm-hmm. Or while we're changing this, should we go ahead and advance to a closure? Because right now, I think the average coffee bag, it might be in, it's going to be a high barrier bag, mm-hmm. You know, foil or metalized or something. And generally, a lot of times you see these tin ties, we call
it. Yeah, that's what it is.
It's an adhesive on one side adhered to the package, and then you fold it down. The intent is that as you fold, because the consumer likes that squared off package, you know, that's the way it's been made in a long time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these coffee companies out there, that's how their packaging room looks. It's set up to make that bag. So it's a major investment. It's not a quick change in order to go
right
to that.
Right.
But now they're saying, you know what, we got to get rid of these multi-materials, because even though we're in flexibles, we're not doing it as well as we could. And I think that's where those conversations are emerging. So
interesting. Stay tuned. And you guys have, so your closures, so I know that there's like the in-store recycle ready and the compostable films. do you make compatible closures for those particular instances and those materials?
Yeah, I mean, so you think about, as a consumer, you think about, when you come across a zipper or a slider on a bag in a store, and you go, yeah, it's got a zipper or a slider. We actually have about 75 active products within that. And you're like, wow, I just don't see that much variation. But it depends on the application, the equipment mm-hmm. it's running on, and what the needs are. And so I feel like as we continue to evolve from where we were and then take the sustainable journey, you're going to see that more people are going to pull from that portfolio so that it better aligns with their package. One example is that, the majority of our portfolio has been recyclable for 30 years. Hmm. But when a customer seals it into a multi-material, welds it into a bag, it's no longer
yeah.
to make that journey. So our challenges today is that customers are coming to us say, okay, we've got a film that's fully recyclable, but it's tough to machine because we're taking away some things. What can you do on the zipper end? So a lot of the time we spend now is focusing on what my favorite term in sustainability is, and that's collaboration, and working with the brand or the packer, the OEM, the machine guy, and then the feedstock suppliers to say, okay, here's what we want to do. You need to tweak here. You need to tweak here in order for us to do it. And we're starting to find more and more success. But it's not necessarily what it looks like now is not necessarily what we thought it would look like 10 years ago.
Right.
So
that's called the vanilla ice principle, where you stop, you collaborate, and you listen. If you're familiar with
the classic
awful rap
song. Barry Manilow earlier, so
that was more for my mom, because I'm pretty sure that my mom listens to my podcast. I don't really know any Barry Manilow songs. I really love rap music, hip hop music. So I do. Yeah, I do. Cool. And so kind of wrapping up the sustainability portion of this. So, as flexible packaging is not going anywhere, it's the product market within the space of packaging, from the latest data I think I saw, is sort of the fastest growing market is flexible films, because of the inherent sustainability, just in the fact that, if you take something that was in a big giant tub, let's say it's a powder, and you can fit whatever it is, 50,000 of these things in a truck, and now you can fit whatever the number, 5 million of these pouches in the same truck and get it to the same spot. And so there's inherently a lot of sustainability, even though the end life is tough, and that's what the consumers feel. I a full life cycle analysis of flexible packaging when it comes to, keeping food fresh. And I certainly think that the closure is a big part. Like, we have 5 kids. We are constantly having to reuse food, and to not have the ability to quickly and conveniently seal something and keep that food fresh. If we couldn't do that, it ends up in the garbage, which is, causing, it not only has the energy already been used, but when we use that energy to not feed people, which is why the food was created in the first place, mm-hmm. we're just creating problems. So, I think that it's going to continue to grow. What of this market segment do you see, from your guys' perspective, being the area of growth? Like, we've talked before the call about like CRC, child resistant closures. Is it the sustainable, closures in terms of end of life sustainability, with monomaterials and compostability, or is that kind of tough to gauge right now?
No, I mean you never know what strength or where the attention is getting now, what that might evolve to, right? But
right.
The areas that, you know, we put a lot of our energy behind are child resistance, because, you know, with flexible packaging, we're trying to do things that you could get in a rigid package. Mm-hmm. And we've been very successful as an industry at obtaining a lot of those things. But, you know, until we came out with our child guard, child resistant slider, and we launched that in 2014, that became the first way to commercially lock a bag, a commercial pouch. And so that has opened doors to brand managers and product managers to now look at new options on the shelf in many, many markets, everything from household cleaners, products that are regulated, mm-hmm. that have to have special packaging or child resistant closures. And that could be like household cleaners, pool chemical, agrochemical, pesticides, pharmaceuticals, nutraceuticals, sure. It just keeps going. So it's really opened up a whole new category. But I feel like when it comes to the general closures, the way we've evolved and the way we're going to go is that child resistance, e-commerce, mm. and sustainability are the primary areas that we all have to be looking at.
I totally agree. And I think the data is really supporting that. And that's not like... The COVID pandemic has not shifted. Like all it did was just accelerate trends that I think were already brewing. You know, it's not like e-commerce just came out of nowhere, you know, like, oh, what's this Amazon company? I've never heard of them until COVID hit. Like, clearly we were already getting comfortable. I think it just probably has accelerated and quite frankly stressed a lot of supply chains in the middle of doing that. But I totally agree. I don't see it going anywhere. And just based on the limited requests that I get for, things like child resistance and sustainability, and then even e-commerce, because what a lot of people I don't think realize is that a lot of these big brands that we're so familiar with had zero direct to consumer strategy prior to COVID. They knew they had to get there eventually. But, you know, you've got big, massive companies, like multi-billion dollar, multinational corporations who are like, we don't know how to take an order. Like somebody couldn't just go order a product and then it gets shipped to them because they're so used to the distribution channels that have been set up for decades. So they're, you know, but that was a good pressure, right, on the system, because it's creating these new innovations, I think, which will keep coming out.
Absolutely. I agree 1,000%. It's, we knew we were on a growth track, especially with the e-commerce space. And I think that by 2022, we had, certain dollar estimates, but COVID did exactly what you're saying. It accelerated that. It forced us to take a look at it sooner. And I think something else that happened is that part of this is consumer acceptance. You know, mm-hmm. it's like my wife goes to the grocery store because, by golly, that's how she does it. That's how she's always done it. That's how she grew up. And you can physically look and shop and choose things. And then COVID hits, and now we're online trying to see if we can't make an entire grocery order that we can pick up. So now that means that we are forcibly trying to change from a brick and mortar direct marketing thing to an omni-channel. Mm-hmm. Where we're ordering online, utilizing e-commerce, but then, you know, it's being grabbed off the shelves at the store.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people did that very same thing. And they said, you know what, that actually worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah.
So, you know, after COVID, you know, when we get back to our, whatever that new normal will be,
fingers crossed. Soon.
Fingers crossed. You know, my guess is that a lot of people are going to say, "Hey, I'm well on my way into repeat orders like this." So,
yep.
I think we're going to accelerate. Yep.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Well, Todd, we're kind of here at the end of the interview, so it goes fast.
Wow.
These things. I know. We've been it's been 33 minutes, I believe. So. Time flies when you're talking about packaging and COVID. It doesn't fly when you're talking about COVID. Time's like, yeah. Time has taken on a whole new meaning for me in the last 10 months.
When you're in
months.
Packaging, you find that you can kind of get carried away talking about the topic. It is addictive, right?
It is, yeah. It turns out I have this whole podcast about
See? And by the way, I want to commend you for this. I think it's a great idea. You know, when I started listening to podcasts off of iTunes, I thought, it'd be kind of cool to someday have a packaging one. Nah, it'll never happen.
Never happen.
It'll never happen.
So. You know what struck me, and I've said this before on the podcast. So what struck me is because I love listening to podcasts. I read a lot, and I like listening to podcasts. So that's kind of how I consume media. I'm not on – I'm very active on LinkedIn. I post every day. But I don't hardly post anything on, you know, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat. I don't really do anything with those. And I tend to consume my media through like traditional, like newspaper, like local news, international news, and then podcasts. And I realized that I had three podcasts that I listened to regularly about the Denver Nugget basketball team. Three.
Oh.
About a single basketball team in one sport. And I thought, surely there is a podcast about a $1 trillion global industry. And at the time that we started it, which is now about 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, that answer was no. There was not an active packaging podcast. Now, since then, there have been some that have started, and I'm super grateful to have helped start some of those. So I don't host them, but you know, it's not like we're in competition or anything.
Well,
so,
take a moment. Where would you like to see it go from here?
I don't really have much of a vision outside of continuing to share people's stories and you know, kind of elevate and uplift other people and elevate and uplift you know, their story and their companies and what folks are doing. That's always been the goal from the outset for both Ted and myself. And so, you know, we'll just keep doing. There's a lot of really cool and awesome people in the packaging industry. So we're never without topics or subjects or people to talk with. Now, whether or not, you know, somebody wants to start, like, I think there's room for like a sustainability podcast. I think there's room for more specific podcasts about, you know, like we didn't really talk anything technical about, you know, closures and I wouldn't even know where to go with that. I'm sure you do. I'm sure there are plenty of folks who want to know about that. And most of them probably graduated from Michigan State. I just don't know. My idea has always been, I have a genuine love of people. I get to travel. I've been able to speak all around the world. I love learning about different cultures. And because of that sort of inherent curiosity, this has become a real passion and joy of mine. It's just to talk to people and get to hear their stories and then broadcast it out to anywhere from 400 to 600 people who will download and listen to this episode. So it's cool to watch those metrics. And I would love to see that get up to, you know, 1,000 people per episode are listening, because not because I want to be, or Ted wants to be like some massive, huge packaging celebrity or whatever that's supposed to mean, but because it means that your story is being heard by more and more people. What you guys do, you know, what if like for this episode, it would be awesome if somebody just went, I never thought about like closures when it comes to sustainability and stopping food waste. That's interesting. And then they go back to their packaging engineering team and they say, have we ever taken a look at this? Like, you know, I don't know. I would hope that conversation could happen though.
I think it will. I also think that as you continue on, you're finding that you're building quite a library here of information and resource. You know, whether people want to find out about people from different companies or just learn about a topic, you know, there's all of a sudden a podcast venue to do that. So I think that's
great. Yeah, it's been awesome. It's one of the, you know, kind of outside of my full-time job, just things that I enjoy doing. I love doing this, the podcast, I coach basketball. I love hanging out with my family. I love writing poetry and watching and playing basketball. So,
Well, thank you. And reading, I read
quite a bit, just like you. So,
yeah, no, that's great. It's good for us. But you know, if anything comes up on the packaging front or zippers or closures for you or your audience, we're always receptive to having the discussion.
How do people connect with the one and the only Todd? You know what? I'm going to butcher your last name. Is it Muesling?
It's Muesling. It looks like Muesling. So you didn't butcher it. You're like most people that that's how you would tend to it. But phonetically, it would be like M-O-Y-S-L-I-N-G, Muesling.
Okay. So what is the etymology, or the etymology? Is that the right thing? What's the ethnic background of your name?
It's very German. In fact, when I go to Germany, it's refreshing because nobody gets it wrong.
They all
say it correctly. And
That would be correct, right? Yeah. I didn't, because the two S's would have the umlaut, or not the umlaut, yeah. Looks like a B. It's been 20 years since I've taken a German class.
Yeah, and then the EU is more of like a Sigmund Freud EU sound, so it's that oi sound that they get from.
Yeah. Okay, got it. So, so how do people get in touch with Todd Muesling, and they want to say, "Sehr gut, Todd Muesling."
Sehr gut. So, sehr gut. I think the easiest way would be they could visit the website www.freshlock.com, and there's a hyphen in between fresh and lock.
Okay. C K.
L-O-C-K, yep. And then from there, that'll go in through marketing. And depending if it's a question that I can help with or a discussion I can help with, I'd be happy to follow up. And then I have an email directly too, but it's long and complicated. So I think that's probably the easiest way to start.
Got it. And they can find you on the LinkedIn with your cool banner.
Sure, by all means. Reach out to me, say hi, LinkedIn. You know, another thing I tell people is I haven't done it in a while because we haven't had a trade show in a while, but if I'm connected with you on LinkedIn and we're at a trade show and you're at a trade show, come and say hi to me. You know, it's more than just, you know, a connection on a social media. It's also, you know, hey, we're connected. Let's chat.
Bring it into the real life. Yeah. I didn't tell you this either, but one time I did write a hip hop song, and I've done a couple, and
have I heard any?
Dear goodness, no. And you're better off. You're better off having not heard it. But one of the lines was, "I've got to keep my thoughts fresh, like a Ziploc," is what I said. But like, I could revise it to, "I got to keep my rhymes fresh with this fresh lock," right. And then we can take that and your marketing department can run with it. You can have the world's most sub-mediocre hip hop artist from Utah.
I feel like we're coming back full circle now. We're starting out with these puns where we started the conversation. So, but it would be right. It'd be like, I feel like we need to come up with that fresh, lock it up. Am I anywhere close?
No, sorry.
Okay, all right.
That's not going to work. We'll play around with it. You know, we'll figure it out, but Todd, it's been awesome. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for doing some rad stuff and being a cool person to get to talk to. And appreciate being on the podcast.
Adam, all the best.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.